sauce comes from Indonesia, and it's commonly eaten with Indonesian food, which obviously we have a lot of here in the Netherlands.
Now, it's not obvious to a whole lot of people that Indonesian food would go with the Netherlands, but it is super popular here.
Yeah, it was a colony, yeah. And then there's been tons of Indonesian immigration to Holland since then.
Tons of Indonesian restaurants in Amsterdam and around the Netherlands. It's kind of like as Indian food is to London, I would say, Indonesian food is to Amsterdam.
Yeah, precisely.
And then something called, I hope I'm pronouncing it right, oorlog. Topping?
Yeah, so oorlog literally means war. Apparently it's because it looks a huge mess. It's basically mayonnaise, peanut sauce, and chopped up raw onions. So it's quite a combination. And if you could see our fries now sitting in front of us, they do look like a huge battle of toppings.
It's total carnage on top of these fries. It's like, it looks almost like a half and half cookie because you have the dark squirt of peanut sauce and then a squirt of white mayo next to it. And then there's just onions all over the top of it. Where did this concept come from?
So the peanut sauce, I believe, is also the Indonesian connection. So we'll have satay sauce with everything. I don't think even people really realize now that it's not natively Dutch, let's say.
It's not peanut butter. It's more like, it's more savory. The kind of thing you dip chicken in like a Thai restaurant.
Yeah, so precisely satay sauce.
All right. And then the mayo, I guess, comes from because everybody loves mayo over here.
Yeah, I mean, obviously France is close by and that influence just came from there over the years.
And then the onion comes on top, and I've noticed the Dutch love putting onions on everything, including, like, you get a piece of herring that will be otherwise raw, but you put onion on it. Why?
The Dutch usually like quite big flavors, I've noticed. It's not my favorite, to be honest. Sometimes I ask for oorlog without the onions, because I find the raw tang a bit too much.
Well, I'm about to experience it, regardless of what you think, for journalism. And I've got a piece. Oh, look, I picked up
a sauce on there.
Yeah, I picked up the perfect piece. It's got just the right amount of all of those three ingredients. And we'll see what happens when I put it in my mouth. Here we go. You know, it's not as insane as I thought it would be. The peanut part just adds a little bit of extra savoriness to the mayo part. They have similar consistencies, really, and it just adds a little bit, makes the mayo less bland, I find. When you have it, I mean, do you ever order it this way?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, yeah. I mean, usually it's 3 o'clock in the morning and not at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, but yeah, I do.
I guess is this kind of drunk food in the Netherlands?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the fries stand that we just went to, because it's one of the most famous ones in the city and it's really, really good. People go there at all times of the day. But for, I think, the majority of Amsterdammers who are working and living here, it's more of a late night drunk food indeed.
I have a feeling that may be where the oorlog topping came from.
Maybe.
You know what? Just put some peanut sauce on. You know what? Also put some mayo on it. You know what? Also put some onion on that.
Just keep going. Just keep throwing it all on.
And some cookies. Vicky Hampton. She writes the Dutch food website Amsterdam Foodie. And Brendan, it seems only appropriate to wash down Amsterdam's drunk food with a drink.
Right? Agreed. And we are at the right part of the show. This is where we tell you something that happened in history, then have a bartender capture its essence in the form of a cocktail.
It is our famed history lesson with booze.
First, the history part, and appropriately for this all-food show, it's about a sharp little invention that made eaters smile a little brighter.
Michelle Philippi tells the tale.
Charles Forster made millions out of little pieces of wood. It was the mid-1800s, and Charles, a Bostonite, was working for his uncle's company in Brazil, where he couldn't help but notice that the locals were really into using toothpicks. These weren't the splintery toothpicks folks would whittle for themselves back in the States. These were smooth, high-quality numbers, hand-carved and imported from Portugal. Charles's idea? Get a machine to mass-produce similar toothpicks and sell them cheaply around the world. Not being an engineer, Charles bought the patent rights to someone else's machine to do the job. It was designed by a guy in Boston to cut wood into pegs, which were used in making shoes. Charles and a mechanic friend adapted it to cut the pegs smaller and thinner, and voila, the first machine-made toothpicks. Only problem? Boston store owners didn't believe people would buy something they could just carve off a twig. So, since there was no apparent demand for his product, Charles created some. He hired a team of kids to barge into stores and clamor for his toothpicks. Then later, Charles would stop by and find the owners more than willing to stock a few boxes.